This is Tennessee Ernie Ford broadcasting from Concordia Seminary doing Greek Club. Some of you guys are old enough to know who Tennessee Ernie Ford really was. Yeah, I don't know. So. No, this is Jeff Gibbs with a cold. I think we're broadcasting from the Tower of Healing at Concordia Seminary, because I think I may have turned the corner. Now, having said that, it'll be worse tomorrow. But I'm really hoping to be in full voice on Friday night for the Preacher Classic.
Oh, yes.
That's right. And but in between then and now, we are going to read 2 Corinthians. We're in chapter 6 at the beginning. And we are fixing to enter vocabulary land, if I could say it that way, where we have kind of an odd, long, suspended construction, and people try to make various things of it. I'm pretty sure we translated 1 and 2 last week. So working together, Paul says, also we exhort or invite or encourage you not to receive in vain the grace of God, for he says, or for the Scripture says, I heard you at an acceptable time. I helped you at the day of salvation. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Now is the day of salvation. So that part's easy enough. And then, but what we get is in verse 3, we get a masculine plural nominative participle, didontes, right? We have no main verbs here, say, with one small parenthetical addition in verse 9. But so we don't actually get a main verb until verse 11. See if you can believe that. Excuse me. Where we get our mouth has opened to you. So the question is, what do you do with a long string? And we have just, again, we'll read it in a second, but just to get a running start on it, look at it. We have didontes in verse 3, and then a henna clause. It's dependent on that, of course. And then we have, rather, verse 4, synistantes, from synistano, present, we presenting ourselves. And then we get N phrases, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 of them. Okay. Then we get dia phrases, and not only that, but the meaning shifts. Of dia plus the genitive, we have 1, 2, 3. In the first one, it's probably means, and the second one is attendant circumstance, perhaps, passing through. Then we go back to nominative constructions. We have adjectives, which are probably should be taken as substantives. So planoi, deceitful guys. True guys. Then we have participles again, nominative plural masculine, agnoumenoi, 1, 2, 3. And then we have, and behold we live, then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So, verb, where's the verb? Now, let me say something about this. Because it's interesting to me how this does crop up from time to time. If you look at the New Testament grammars, at least, and to be honest, I don't know if I've seen this in either Goodwin or Smythe, the two classical grammars of which I'm aware, they will admit that in certain rare occasions, a participle can be acting like a finite verb. And what they suggest is that it's mostly in hortatory contexts and mostly... You don't have any verb. I mean, you can't even see a regular verb. In that kind of a context, the grammars very cautiously suggest that a participle can be acting like an imperative. Okay. Even more rarely, they suggest a participle can act in that kind of a context where there's no main verb for it to be dependent on. A participle in that kind of a context can function as an indicative. This is very rare, and they're very cautious about this. And not all the grammars even mention this. What's interesting is how sometimes this very cautious approach to this participle as finite verb is sort of almost willy-nilly expanded as if it becomes one of the acceptable options for taking a participle, a predicate position participle. It's highly unlikely, see, and it should be sort of a grammatical or a syntactical case of last resort, see. So I'm actually not sure what to do here. This is actually one of the passages that Blas de Brunner-Funk mentions as a possibility of, okay, maybe these participles should be taken as finite verbs. But the other two ways to do it would be, excuse me, to link them all to paracolumen in verse 1. And that would be a long string, but I don't think it would be unheard of, not in Greek anyway. Just try, I've read about this tiny bit much of Josephus, and he's got some serious participle strings going on that all hang off of a main verb earlier, usually earlier. So check it out. I think it would make sense. Working together also, we encourage by giving an offense to no one. You know, the didontes could express manner or something like that. So I think you can have them make sense by hanging them all off of the main verb in verse 1. The other way to do it, and I mentioned this one very cautiously because, to be honest, you see this even more rarely in the grammars. Sometimes if you have just a participle stand there by itself, you might imagine that it's actually a shortened periphrasis, so that you just supply the linking verb, you know. So verse 3 then would begin to be translated as, and we are giving an occasion of offense in no way to no one, you know, that kind of a thing. So I wanted to introduce that because, again, can you imagine you go that long, you have this immense piling up of prepositional phrases nominative, plural, adjectives of various forms and that kind of thing. So let's read it. And again, it's one sentence. So there you go. Greek is a hypotactic language, right? Not paratactic. So I have no idea where I'll stop. I think I'll stop when I start coughing. So we'll see how far I get. So verse 3. Me de mi'an en me de ne de dantes proskopein. Hiname mo me the he diakonia. All and Ponti sinistantes heotus host theu diakonoi. N, here come the N's, right? N, I didn't get very far. Hippomene pole, and thlipsisen, and anankais, and stenokoriais, and plegais, and philakais, and akatastasiais. In kapois, in agripniais, and nestuais, and hagnateta, and gnose, and makarthumia, and krestateta, and pneumati hagio, and agape an hypocrito, and lugo aletheas, and dyname theu. End of end phrases, right? Well, maybe we'll just pretend that it's periphrastic at the beginning and make it work that way. And we are giving, take me de mi'en, the accusative at the beginning, to be modifying proskopein. So we are giving no occasion for stumbling. That's what proskope means. And me deni to anyone. Right? In order that the ministry might not be mo ma'omide, which I looked up. It's a middle deponent verb, and it means to find fault with something. This is passive, so it means to be found fault with. However you'd render that in English, what, criticized or slandered or something like that. But I was happy to find a Greek verb that sounds like that, mo ma'omai. I'm not sure why I like the sound of that, so. So we're not doing that, but rather, in everything, let's just again pretend we're being periphrastic here. We are presenting ourselves as, now nominative plural, servants of God. And we're doing so in much endurance. This is your job description on your call documents. Right. Your best ministry now. Right? By the way, two of our fourth-year men went to hear Joel and Victoria Osteen here in St. Louis on Friday night. These are reasonable guys, and they couldn't stay through the whole thing. It was so heretical. So I've actually asked them to consider maybe talking to Dr. Becker. This is an advertisement. And maybe giving a lecture to the students about their reaction to what Osteen had to say. They said it was unbelievably bad. They had no idea it would be that bad. Yeah. So it makes me want to buy his book and read it so that I can see for myself. So that's good. And Jesus will still love him. But we might not like his doctrine. I have a book allowance. I can buy the book. So. Boy, you guys are kind of mean. I was going to say something snippy, but I won't. In much endurance, in tribulations, in situation of necessity, right? Ananke is an adjective. It means necessary. In afflictions, these are all bad words, right? In blows, in jails or prisons, in unsettling things, riots, perhaps, in labors, in agripneo is one of the verbs in the eschatological discourse in Mark, to stay awake, in watchfulness, or maybe sleeplessness, in fastings, in, notice the shift now, in holiness or purity, in knowledge, in long suffering, in gentleness or goodness, in the Holy Spirit, in unhypocritical love, in the word of truth, in the power of God. Interesting shift from bad, 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 bad to good, 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 right? And again, these are the qualifications and the descriptions of those who are God's diakonoi, God's servants, right? And then it just keeps going. So we're presenting ourselves as these kinds of diakonoi. That's the point. This would be a 37-part sermon, right? So then he continues in the middle of verse 7, Diaton haplon tes dik iosines, ton dexion kai aristeron, dia doxes kai atemias, dia disfemias kai eu femias, hos planoi, back to the nominative plurals, kai elethes, hos agnoumenoi kai epigenoskamenoi, hos apothneskantes kai edu zomen, hos paidiuamenoi kai me thanatumenoi, hos lupumenoi aeda kairantes, hos ptokoi polus de plutizantes, hos meden ekantes kai panta kat ekantes. Paul says something very similar to this in chapter 4, you might remember, where he's paired these contrasting participles together. So it makes you wonder, if you have two of the powerhouse passages like this in 2 Corinthians, if this is, to be honest, a feature of the style of whoever his scribe happens to be. You know, if you see a lot of the stuff in 2 Corinthians, maybe part of the explanation for that is the man, or I suppose theoretically the woman, who's writing this down for him, right? So the scribe, probably a man, I suppose, in that culture. So we are servants of God, ministers of God, verse 4, now back down in the middle of 7, through the agency, right, through the weapons of righteousness of the right and the left. And you remember that right and left in Greek are always plural. It's kind of an idiom, the right hand and the left hand. We Southpaws assume that he saved the best for the last there. Now, at least I think there's a shift in meaning. See, diaton huplon, through tools or weapons, that's agency or means, right? But now it's through glory and dishonor. To me, that seems like the dia plus the genitive has now shifted its meaning to, which it can do in Greek, to mean the circumstances through which you pass, right? Like passing through fire, which is, as in English, also in Greek, on that preposition. Through disphemias and euphemias, through slander and good report, or you could just go bad report and good report to get the contrast. Now let's not use prepositional phrases to modify the diakonoi of God. Now let's use hos and more nominative plurals, right? And I think we can probably take all of these adjectives, whether they're regular adjectives or participles, as substantives. They're all nouns. Just as back up in verse 4, diakonoi was a noun. Of course, it is a noun. So, as and you get the contrast. This is sort of what people think or what people might perceive, but this is the way it really is. This is the way it seems. This is the way it really is. This is the, you know, that contrast. So as deceivers and true ones, right? So some people think we're planoi. What we really are is aletheis. As not being known and as being known, maybe with epi, fully known, as dying, apothneiskontes. Now here it breaks the pattern. Maybe Paul couldn't help himself. And look, we are living, right? See, he didn't use a participle there, although he could have. As being disciplined or being trained, maybe disciplined, and as not being thanataoed, not being put to death, as grieving, remember that the active voice of lupeo means to transitively grieve someone. The passive voice can mean either to be grieved by someone or just to grieve intransitively. Right? So is this being grieved or is it just grieving? Could go either way. Maybe we'll take being grieved. Now, I is an adverb that means always. Excuse me. De is postpositive. Put de in front of it. Right? So we don't have contrast with chi anymore. We have a de. So as grieving, or perhaps being grieved, but always chirontes, rejoicing, ones. You know, this is the kind of people we are. As poor ones, again, take the de, put it in front of pelus, but richifying many. To plutizo means to enrich or to make rich. As those who have maiden, nothing. By the way, notice that because it's a participle, if you want to say nothing, you use a form of maides, maidene, maiden, not udes. Right? As having nothing and as holding fast to, kata echo can have a variety of meanings, to all things. Wouldn't you like to have a verb? The answer is, well, we get one in verse 11. Questions about that long and elaborate string of things? Yeah, Will.
Just your point about the improvement.
Yes?
Passive, both active meaning being grieving someone, passive being grieved
by someone, right?
And is that a middle, just to grieve, like you're grieving?
It's probably, if the middle voice would still be transitive and you would be the one who's inflicting it. So the choices here are probably, I mean, what do I know about Paul? A lot. The choices are probably a passive form that has the full transitive meaning, but it's just passive. So being grieved by someone, as opposed to the related but slightly modified active voice intransitive meaning, that is just grieving, being sad. So it's the difference between being saddened by someone or just being sad. Those would be the two options. It's probably not middle. Okay. So, yeah, Dennis.
So you say the most logical way to take this whole thing.
Well, I don't know what the most logical way to take it is.
It's okay, though, to take didontes in three as periphrastic and you supply the.
Well, I mentioned that, but again, I Bosterbunder mentions this as a possibility when you have these seemingly, you know, to us, an endless string of participles. And if you did that, then you might take verse 4, synestantes, in the same way, right, because of the Allah contrast. Or you might just hang them all off of, you know. But really, there's a lot of this going on in the New Testament, especially in Paul. The one that always pops into my mind is the famous and controverted passage on marriage. Well, I'll show you. Here, let's go there, and then maybe we'll go farther. The style of Ephesians is very, what do I call it, not elaborate, but lengthy. You get 4, 5, 6 prepositional phrases just heaped up. You have to decide, what are they modifying, you know? And as you know, my favorite example is Abraham Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address while riding on the train on the back of an envelope. what is the prepositional phrase, on the back of an envelope modify. In English, because of word order, it has to modify while writing a train. Wait, the train. Okay. But in Greek, it's easy for it to modify the verb, right? Say, because Greek's word order is not completely tohu vavohu. So you didn't think I knew any Hebrew, did you? But it's pretty close to us. But look at Ephesians 5, verse 18. And do not get drunk with wine, in which is asotia, dissolution. Rather, pleroustē, be filled in the Spirit. Okay, so we have an imperative there. And then we have five participles, see? Speaking to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, making music and psalming in your heart to God. There's participles 2 and 3. Giving thanks always for all things. There's number 4, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. And being subject to one another in the fear of Christ. See, those five participles are articulating, probably, what it means to be filled with the Spirit. See? And what happens is that for no particular grammatical reason, of which I'm aware, syntactical reason, as we have here in Nestle Elan, 21 gets broken, and it's get pushed with what below, and sometimes egalitarians in the church, even conservative ones, will say, look, marriage involves mutual submission. Because Paul begins by saying, well, be subject to one another, and then wives and husbands, see. When in fact, the being subject to one another is an admonition to the congregation, and it's part of being filled with the Spirit, right? So grammatically, and it's interesting how the English translations do this, grammatically, it's just one more participle in a string, you know, and it pretty clearly, I think, goes with pleroustē. But you have to get used to the style of Ephesians, because the style of Ephesians is not exactly like the style of Romans. It's not exactly this like the style of Galatians, for that matter. I mean, it's really interesting. The more I read Paul, which is not very much, the more I see that, you know, the wild card in all of this is the scribe or the amanuensis, who is Paul's compadre, which I think is a Latin word, isn't it? Compadre? No. Yeah. Hic, hoc, compadre. That's all the Latin I know. E pluribus unum. All right. I think we should stop here. It's going downhill fast.